everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, through the darkness that has been the deluge of Rajon Rondo praise, we have started to see a glimmer of hope that he won't be the starting point guard. And he comes in the form of Avery Bradley. This is exciting.
Look at that. So, like, I think if I could write out a script for this season, it involves like Avery Bradley crushing the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals just for maximum deliciousness. So, yeah, man, if like, look, Avery Bradley's been bad the last couple of years, but you can make a much better argument that he can get it back. Dude's 28 years old, right? He lost 40 pounds. You know, Rondo turns 34 this year. So if, you know, Avery Bradley's last couple of years were not encouraging in terms of what he will be, but I'm a lot more optimistic about him being the dude we want him to be rather than Rondo.
I'm skeptical of the whole, you know, 40 pounds being the amount that he's lost. Because, like, if he lost 40 pounds, he's weighing 150 right now. Right? Like, he was never a really big guy. But that said, if he's lost any weight, like, that stuff really does, you know, add up.
He's definitely lost a significant amount of weight. It's maybe not 40 pounds, but he's lost enough for it to be a big deal.
He looks different. You know, mm-hmm. he looks different. And I thought the combination of tweets the other day where it was Anthony Davis said that Frank Vogel has started to tell ball handlers not to dribble around Avery Bradley. Mm-hmm. And then the like 5 minutes later, Avery Bradley said that the person he's been guarding most this training camp thus far has been Rajon Rondo. So the combination there of Avery Bradley picking Rajon Rondo's pocket at every turn, that's what we have to hope for. And like, jokes aside and all of that, Bradley has the chance of winning that starting spot over Rondo, to a greater chance of it politically, because he is Avery Bradley. He has been around the NBA. Mm-hmm. He has a bit of a resume to his name. Alex Caruso does not. So mm-hmm. if it is this, you know, very politically driven thing where it's the superstars who are making this decision, not making this decision, but influencing this decision, it's going to be a harder sell for the coaching staff to tell them, hey, no, look at all the things that Caruso is doing in practice compared to look at all of the things that Avery Bradley is doing in practice. That stuff matters.
It absolutely does. It puts the Lakers in an interesting position on the court of they don't have much in the way of ball handling and playmaking mm-hmm. in that starting lineup if they have Avery Bradley. Now, obviously, that'd still be my preference as opposed to Rondo.
Yeah.
But that puts a heavy burden on LeBron and, to a lesser extent, AD in terms of creating shots for them. So that really puts LeBron in that point guard. I mean, LeBron's going to be who he's always been, but he will initiate more plays as a result of Bradley being starting point guard versus Rondo. And obviously, we don't know who that's going to be, but that's kind of what you're giving up in exchanging one for the other. And I'm totally willing to do that. It just puts a little more on LeBron's shoulders.
Yeah. And I would say also, you know, there was that talk that LeBron wants AD to be a focal point or the focal point of the offense. Mm-hmm. I think the way that that looks is on a lot of pick and roll stuff where he gets the ball basically at the free throw line extended, maybe a couple feet behind the free throw line extended, and he now has two dribbles with a rotating defense facing him. And I think that's the kind of thing that Davis can handle pretty well. He's got a great handle to him, as you saw in the videos that you've made so far. Mm-hmm. He does handle the ball really well. It's just that, you know, it's a little different being able to handle the ball really well and now being expected to carry that kind of a burden heading into a season. That's not quite the same thing there.
Yeah, I mean, they would need an uptick in what he's done in the past. And I do think he's capable of that. The Phil Handy AD combo, I'm really excited about what the possibilities are. Mm-hmm. But if you go with Avery Bradley, that definitely puts more on his shoulders. And I do think he'll be on the perimeter a little bit more because the Lakers fives are not stretch fives by any stretch of the imagination, no pun intended, with Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee. So AD's probably going to be a little more perimeter oriented. So if he is, now's the time to unlock that any untapped ball handling ability that he has.
Yep. Anything else stuck out to you thus far in preseason, or in, not preseason, but training camp? And basically, this is going to be how we're going to handle today's show. We're going to wander around some of the stories that have come out from training camp thus far. And then, you know, if we have time, there are still a bunch of questions that we have to answer to catch us back up for heading into the weekend. But anything, the Bradley thing to me seems like the most significant, because that helps prevent the Lakers from making a really bad decision.
Yeah, I mean, they need somebody to go to. And like you said, for political reasons, like Caruso would have to outplay Rondo to a significantly greater degree than Bradley will have to outplay Rondo to get his minutes, right? So that's important. And if it's setting the stage of, you know, the narratives of this is the direction we're going to go in, because that's really what this is meant. Like, look, I'm excited that Avery Bradley sounds like he looks good in training camp. They're all going to have to prove it to me on the court. We'll see on the court. And
that's what I said last night. It was basically like, yes, Avery Bradley has looked great. And that's the kind of thing I've been hoping to hear from this training camp thus far. But that's the kind of thing you would tend to hear from training camp thus far, especially while he's going up against Rondo. But sorry.
No problem. One thing I've gotten the feel for now, I haven't been in the building yet. Tomorrow's going to be my first day of doing that. I've been helping my pops move over the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. But everybody seems focused. It seems like everyone's on the same page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I try not to get caught up in the training camp stuff where everything's great all over the league. Like, there's every storyline everywhere, there's someone going, you know, because it's all – we don't see any of it. It's all the coaches and the players. And, of course, they're going to say good things about what's going on.
Yeah.
But I find myself more and more looking forward to watching a veteran team. And all of the things that come with that, right? Like, I enjoyed watching the kids and their progression, but you're going to get fewer kind of facepalmy type of moments this season, knock on wood, right? But that I think that's what we're going to get. And I get a sense that guys are locked in based on just how they're talking, and that veterans being around other veterans, I think they can help elevate each other in a way that the kids can't, no matter how good the kids are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's easier for veterans to buy into veterans, right?
Yeah. It's peers, right? It's just a matter of having peers. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, there's actually a question that I'm interested to ask you from the mailbag that I wanted to mention at the top here, but I forgot. Okay. So we'll start with that quick question, and then we'll see where that kind of takes us as a conversation starter. And then again, yeah, like I said, there are several other stories here. Kyle Kuzma's shoe deal to me seems really interesting and backs up a lot of what the Lakers, you know, can offer to stars or players who are hoping to, you know, kind of increase their platform. I thought that was interesting. Alex Caruso's quotes were kind of fascinating to listen to, and you know, it's the kind of thing that you expect to hear from him, but it does sound like he's kind of like chomping at the bit. I get that there's a political thing, but I want this opportunity. So we'll take a quick second. When we come back, we'll get to all of that and see where everything takes us. So somebody asked me, and I'm sorry, I was scrolling through iTunes. I think it was Jarrett Imamura who asked this the other day, but they asked a question about analytics. And I was interested to hear your approach to analytics and utilizing them as a part of your – the question itself was, do you have a favorite analytic? I do not. I'm actually at the other opposite end of the spectrum where I really kind of push away from the catch-all analytics. But is there like what's your approach to utilizing them and talking about them? A lot of your stuff is by definition eye test because it's literally video. Mm-hmm. But how do you utilize those analytics included in that stuff?
So I lump analytics into two separate categories. There are functional analytics and there are argumentative analytics, right? Which are for the purposes of arguing with each other on Twitter, with your friends, or however that goes. And those are your catch-all stats, right? Your BPM, your PIPM, RPM, RAPM, all of these, to which have varying degrees of effectiveness, strengths and weaknesses and all of that, mm-hmm. that I don't think it's necessary to get into all of that. And I'm certainly not a mathematician. I just have a respect for that angle of the game enough to where I've tried to educate myself on each mm-hmm. of those stats on why they are the way they are. But those are just kind of like, give me a number. And if this guy's a 7.2 and this guy's a 5.6, the 7.2 guy's better than the 5.6 guy. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is really the purpose that it serves, is in those argumentative types of senses. Functional analytics are more situationally based, yeah. meaning that how does this guy shoot coming off a screen going to his right? How does he shoot on a one dribble pull up? How often does he box out when he's within the restricted area? These are things that coaches can use and be like, we can attack the other team because they are bad in these situations, yep. or we need to protect against them attacking us because they're good in these situations. They don't give a crap about your BPM or RPM right. or anything else like that, right? Yeah. It doesn't have any functional purpose. Those are the ones that are really interesting to me. Krangis over at B-Ball Index has done some cool stuff, and he'll have some videos out this year on the Laker Film Room channel where he kind of breaks down, like, you know, what does it mean to be open and how open mm-hmm. are you, and what does it mean to be, if you're no one's within 6 feet of you, well, what does it mean to be a 40% shooter? Does that mean you're an average shooter on that type of shot mm-hmm. versus how much gravity do you have that pull, you know? And so marrying the numbers with, okay, now what? What do I do with this information? And then translating that into coach speak. And as time goes by, and this will continue, more and more coaches, more and more GMs, and even more players will grow up with this stuff and be less yeah. resistant to it and incorporate it into how they actually play, how they actually coach, how they actually put together a roster. And so that is the most interesting realm of it to me. Second Spectrum's doing some cool stuff. That's still, you know, pretty much in its infancy, or at least its childhood at this point. So that those are the ones that I'm really into.
Yeah, that's basically where I'm at too. The catch-all stuff, the problem with the catch-all stats to me is that it's impossible to fully define the context under which those catch-all stats take place, right? You know, some of them take into account usage, and some of them are you taking into account caliber of teammate, responsibility over the caliber of teammates, the caliber of coaches that certain players played with, right? So even when you talk about, you know, so the big thing right now, especially on Twitter, is trying to find new and improved ways of saying how overrated Kobe was, right? That feels like a major function of analytics. And, you know, to a certain extent, Kobe was in an optimized situation for chunks of his career, right? He played with Shaq. He had Phil Jackson as his coach.
But it was optimized for him. See, well, that's a whole other conversation.
That's the
right?
thing.
Like, yeah. Like, put Kobe in five-out spacing
yeah.
and tell me how that works
we
out.
We saw
put
him Kobe with D'Antoni.
Put Kobe in an era where you're not emphasizing the 17-foot fadeaway jump shot. Put yeah. his work ethic into our modern understanding of what is a good shot, what is a productive play, and see what happens. These debates are childish and masturbatory, right? It's, I'm going to come up with these numbers to come up with this. I like analytics. I am not against them. But when you leave out so much context and so much of a, like, if you want to be that literal about it, like, the reality is that 95% of the best players of all time have played in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And part of that is because you stand on the shoulders of the people that come before you. Mm-hmm. Would I be able to do the coverage that I do without Chick Hearn? Hell no.
Right.
Right? Not saying I'm better than Chick Hearn. I'm certainly not. But
you might be a better video editor than Chick Hearn. How about that?
I might be that. I might be that. I am informed by the people who come before me, and so are you, and so is everybody mm-hmm. in this industry, right? So the cross-era comparisons and all of that nonsense, they're just trying to – it's like I said, it's masturbatory, right? It's yeah. it's new ways to – and the thing that pisses me off the most about it is not applied the same across. Like the arguments that are against Kobe, you could have made that – can make them about three other dudes on that list. The yeah. one that told me the because we're obviously talking about the Bleacher Report rankings, right? Let's even remove Lakers or any biases I have, anything like that. David Robinson was not a better basketball player than Hakeem Olajuwon was.
Yeah.
And Robinson was great, but the same type of fundamental misunderstanding that exists in that exists in the Steph versus Kobe thing. And you add the confounding factor of it being a cross-era comparison, essentially, right? So just I generally stay out of the ranking debates. I think they're boring. They frustrate me because of the extremely dishonest arguments that are selectively applied. Yeah. But that is my little piece I wanted to speak about that. So thank you for letting me rant there.
That was a fun second segment. That was fun.
Did I take up the whole segment with that? I'm sorry.
No. And also, like, I answered this question the other day just by myself. So it works that you were able to take this one mostly yourself.
All right.
Do you need like a second to go step outside? And
I just blacked out for a moment.
All right. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll talk about the Lakers team that's actually getting ready to embark on this season right now. That is where, like, there are a few things that piss me off more than when I'll criticize a player and I'll get the, well, you never played, right? The other side of that is, the other end of that spectrum is, no, I didn't play. Here's how I can show off the ways that I can tweak numbers to make your favorite player look worse, right?
And the whole, like, look, you don't have to have played basketball to have an opinion worth listening to.
Right.
I mean, I'd be a hypocrite if I felt that. But the degree to which they discount the players, what do you think the implication in that is that these motherfuckers are dumb.
Right.
Right? They have experience in anything that you do in life. You get experiential wisdom if you're paying any degree of attention, right? Like, you know, if they know what it feels like to run into a screen by a 7 foot, 265 pound dude, right? They know what it feels like to try and check a Kobe in isolation. Like, that doesn't mean everything thing they say is right, but the degree to which it's like, oh yeah, it's just the players being dumb. Like, the degree to which they're dismissed drives me freaking crazy because they're the only people who possess that type of wisdom.
Yeah.
And it's just so, like, I really resent that implication that, like, oh, you're dummies. Here are my numbers. Not saying the numbers are invalid, but the degree to which those get propped up as opposed to that experiential wisdom, that people who tend to be so focused on this is true of logic and this is true of numbers, which fall into that logic, is they are blind to the other wisdoms that exist. Yeah. And there are a few others, and it just drives me up a wall.
No, I completely agree. I'm... The idea that I would somehow know just flat out more about the game of basketball than a player who is at most or at least making, what is it, 40 times more than I'm currently making now?
Put the numbers aside, man. They spend lives doing it.
To do that, like, to who has reached a point in basketball, the 0.00000001% of basketball player. The idea that I would know more about basketball than that player is astonishingly stupid, right? But the idea, you know, the other side of that, the flip side of that coin, where we now appeal to the authority that comes with that experience, like, we can't do that either. So, as per usual, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And somehow, like, I don't know how many times, how many examples, how many billions of examples of conversations, of situations, or whatever that we have to go through before we realize that the answer is not one thing or the other, but usually somewhere in those shades of gray. You know, one day we'll learn. Maybe. Maybe one day we'll... No, we probably won't.
Yeah.
All right, back to the Lakers that we're talking about. I wanted to talk about Kuzma's... Kyle Kuzma. Is what I want to talk about now. How did you feel, you know, about the deal itself? Does this, like, if you're the Lakers, you have to hold this up to just about any free agent, right? Without insulting Kyle Kuzma, obviously. But Kuzma doesn't have the resume of a face, as Shams Charania put it, a face of a shoe company. a player who could potentially get his own shoe. He doesn't have that kind of resume. He doesn't have that kind of, you know, mass appeal that if it, he wouldn't be able to have this opportunity, I don't think, if he wasn't a Laker, and specifically a Laker alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis, right? So how do the Lakers take advantage of this is my question.
I mean, this is yet another example of the degree to which you can benefit from from being a Laker. You know, Kuz has got 800-something thousand followers on Twitter. Basically, Kuz is a guy in the best situation in the NBA for marketing yourself, and he is extremely good at marketing himself. So this is the recipe for that, right? Like, and he's done a phenomenal job. This deal is supposed to pay him $3 million annually. That's more than his basketball contract. Yeah. He's making 1.9 or something. This is life-changing money for him. That's great. And that's something that the Lakers can definitely put forward toward free agency. I think the same thing is going to happen with Anthony Davis on an even bigger scale, right? The type of endorsements. If that dude goes out and averages the 28 and 12 that he's capable of, that he's done before while being a great defensive player, that's not going to be like, oh, yeah, he's really, really good. It's going to be like, oh, my God, you know, like he's going to be this. They're going to be just much more in the way of brands chasing
him. Face of the NBA, potentially.
Very much so. So, yeah, my only other thing is they got to start shipping Grant off a little bit of that money, considering that's his design and he jacked it from him. So, oh, did I say that not privately? I need to get that out there.
No, it should be out there that our buddy Grant Goldberg created, what was it, Kuzmania, right?
Yeah.
The logo for Kuzmania, and it is now on a building on the way to Staples Center.
Yeah.
That portion of Puma's branding here was actually came directly from Grant Goldberg. So that was tough to see. Give Grant some money.
Let's chip Grant off. There was old when me, Darius, and Grant were at Form Blue and Gold, Grant would run the Form Blue and Gold Twitter account. October 19th, 2017. Go look up that tweet on Form Blue and Gold or at Form Blue Gold _. Go tell me what that looks like, because that was out there before anything else. Let's get Grant paid. That's going to be my new hashtag. I don't ever use hashtags. Who am I kidding? But get Grant paid. That's going to be my my goal.
I started the hashtag hire Grant thing like way back in the day.
All right.
Now it's got to be hashtag pay Grant.
That's right.
I think the Kuzma thing is fascinating here, and I think it's exactly what we've been talking about. It's why Anthony Davis wanted to be a Laker in the first place. Like, this isn't rocket science, and it's funny how, you know, non-Laker fan, and I get why they do that, right? Because you don't want to admit or address an advantage that you have no control over, right? If I'm a Bucks fan and I'm concerned already about losing Giannis, right? And Giannis is sitting here seeing if there's a way to continue to expand his brand and his platform, and the Lakers are sitting right there having gotten or helped land Kyle Kuzma this Puma deal, I would be a little nervous today if I was a Bucks fan. You have to admit that. But if you don't acknowledge it, maybe there's a chance that it doesn't necessarily exist to the same extent that you're concerned it does, and therefore we get the conversations about it that we do.
I mean, even beyond the star type players like AD and Giannis, like Kuz is not at that point yet, although I would argue he's a little more famous than Danny Green, right? And Danny Green was talking at Media Day about how, like, somebody asked him, you know, do you have media, you know, goals when you retire? And Jared Dudley's another guy who could fit under this, right? And Danny Green, he didn't say yes, but he was like, yeah, you know, you look at, start thinking about
Josh
what am
Hart
I going to do?
Has a popular podcast.
Absolutely.
Like, so who the hell would know Josh Hart if he wasn't a Laker?
And Danny Green's about to have a more popular podcast than he did in Toronto, right?
Yeah.
So these things matter to these guys, and they're looking, you know, their careers end most of the time in their early to mid 30s. You know, you got a lot of life after that, and a lot, you know, and they want to be able to pursue different options, and LA gives them the chance to do that.
Yep. Another storyline that came out of training camp thus far. Well, this was from Media Day, but Rob Pelinka and Frank Vogel both spoke about the shooting on the Lakers roster, and this has been a concern that you and I will sometimes kind of bring up. I'll just paraphrase, because Rob Pelinka, if I actually read it word for word, we'd be here for another half hour or so. But Rob Pelinka basically said he acknowledged mistakes that were made in the past. So there's a little bit of, if, I don't know if you want to play 50 Shades of Shade for Magic Johnson there. And then he talked about some of the signings that they have: Danny Green, Quinn Cook, KCP, Jared Dudley, Troy Daniels, and Avery Bradley, all guys who have in the past made three-pointers fairly consistently. And then Frank Vogel talked a little bit about, you know, the circumstantial reasoning behind why the Lakers might not have been as good from three-point range last year, and whether that can be addressed as well. I want to start with the circumstantial one, because you and I have talked about the personnel stuff in the past. We've talked about rotations and lineups that might better make for more consistent shooting on the Lakers. But circumstantially, look, the Lakers hired a shooting coach. They have Phil Handy. There are more people, I think, in the organization with more power who recognize the benefits of modernizing the organization's approach to basketball. So do you think there is something that can be done circumstantially to address the team's shooting and improve what we saw compared to last year?
I mean, I think that the degree to which a shooting coach helps, now you should have one. Debatable. And you should have your right. your Phil Handys and whatnot. I think there's something to debate on that. It's not something where every other team or maybe even half the teams in the league don't have a dedicated shooting coach. So I do think these things matter. I think it's more, especially with a veteran team, it's more about just getting the dudes who can shoot, you know? Yeah. And I thought they did a solid job of that. I think all in all, this is about an average shooting team, three-point shooting team in the NBA. And relative to the last few years, that's a massive upgrade.
Yeah.
I think they're, you know, 15th in the NBA, something like that at that. I think that they may rank higher than that because the other thing that you can do to improve your three-point shooting is get better three-point shot creators. Mm-hmm. And we have two great ones in Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And so that may bump the team from being a good shooting or an average shooting team to a good one. Having Mike Penberthy, having Phil Handy, those things will help. The one thing I'm concerned, I think that they could put some bad shooting lineups on the court, right? Yeah. Like Avery Bradley is a similar three-point shooter to Rajon Rondo in that everything where, unless he's wide open, he's a sub 30% three-point shooter. Now, he hit 40% of his wide open ones last year, and his average was 35.1% from three. But teams will play off of Bradley, and if you've got him on the court or Rondo on the court and JaVale or Dwight Howard, if you've got two guys on the court at the same time who are not a threat from out there, it's really hard to have good offense in the modern NBA. Now, having Anthony Davis and LeBron James may still get you there, right? But even though I think the shooting on this team is about average, I do have some concerns that there may be some times where we're well below average as a result of the particular five guys that are on the court.
Yeah, that's what I wrote for Silverscreen when I covered the quote, was basically like, yes, theoretically there are reasons why you can be optimistic about this team shooting compared to last year, especially compared to last year. For one thing, it can't get much worse.
Jeez, man. Bro, that was the most frustrating.
Yeah. But also, like, to the point that you're making, it's not just about having shooters on the roster. It's about making sure that those shooters have optimized situations while they're – like, Reggie Bullock was a good shooter before he got to the Lakers last year, and his shooting fell off a damn cliff because they didn't understand the circumstantial elements of putting those shooters in the best spots as possible.
And that team was falling apart too, right?
Yeah, that didn't help either.
Shooters are more dependent upon the guys around them than really any other type of player, except for maybe your rim protector, like your rim runner type of guys, like Dwight and JaVale, right? Like, they're not going to create their own offense all that often at this point. But yeah, part of the reason why Bullock fell apart is just the team was falling apart.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Anything else that you've noticed coming out of training camp that you want to get to? I think we're pretty set, but your call.
Yeah, no, I think we're good. I'm just looking forward. We'll record again tomorrow, and then the next time we'll have basketball to talk about.
How insane. We finally freaking made it. Oh, I did want to talk about, really quickly, the reaction to SB 206.
Oh, hell yeah. That's my reaction.
Yeah. Agreed. Kuzma's response to it, I found interesting on a couple levels. For one thing, the fact that he was still excited about it, despite not being the kind of guy that they would have helped in college, says a lot about his character, in my opinion, right? The empathy of, like, yeah, we all went through that, and sure, some people might benefit from this now in ways that I wasn't able to, but it's still progress.
Absolutely.
He did have a question, though, about whether or not it would affect the competition between, you know, the differing schools if and when all these schools are on the same page. How do you think? Do you think that's something that can be addressed? Is it even worth bringing up right now? That's kind of my question, is whether it's worth bringing up right now.
So just to clarify for the listeners what SB 206 is on the front end, it's going to allow players to pursue endorsement deals and profit off of their likeness, even if they're in college, right? Mm-hmm. So this is not an institutionalized, everybody gets paid type of deal that we talk about. It's just if you're popular enough, you can get yourself a – and even I do think a guy like Kuz can benefit off of that. A lot of the smaller towns across the country and in the – states that aren't, you know, that don't have your big cities in them.
And stuff like
that. Like for a car dealership or, you know, things along those lines, get a few bucks based off of that. That's great, man. What's wrong with that in the first place is what I don't get. Right. And, boo freaking who if it damages competition. You notice how like a bunch of other states were like, oh shit.
Oh
like,
shit. Now we got to think about it too.
Lose all of our, these studs to freaking to California. Right.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, boo hoo. Like, oh no, darn, you've got to pay for someone. Like everyone talks about free market and things like that. Well, this is what the free market looks like. These guys. Yeah. And let's back up for a second, man. These kids are getting paid anyway. It's just in this very unregulated.
Like, yeah. It makes it so that it's really easy for people to, for the kids to be taken advantage of, as evidenced by Zion, who had to like sue his way out of a bad contract that he signed in college because it had to take place in the shadows.
Yeah. And so I think it's great for the kids. And I think that, you know, I was just cracking up the next day, all of these bills getting introduced in all of these like SEC football countries that would argue to the death, like, no, they're getting paid off of scholarships and that's enough. And, you know, as soon as, all right, well then you do your thing, states' rights, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So. No, I think overwhelmingly this is a step in the right direction. I don't think it's really arguable, debatable that it isn't, right? Mm-hmm. This is money that the NCAA, by the way, isn't even giving up. Like, it's not like the NCAA can we aren't the SB 206 isn't asking the NCAA or the Pac-12, who are both getting ready to sue the state of California, by the way, but it isn't asking them to assign an additional stipend. This is money that the kids can go out and make on their own. And, you know, the example I use in college, when I was there, I was an English major, right? As an English major, I was able to use my tools to work as a blogger. And while working as a blogger, I was able to add to the amount of revenue that saw its way into my bank account that the school wasn't going to be able to generate off of me, mm-hmm. right? It's not like, you know, there are all kinds of endorsements lining up to sponsor English majors, but I was able to use my skill and have it benefit me while I was in college. And then eventually when I got out of school, I was all the more prepared to have that lined up, have that career path, that job lined up for myself. And the idea that anybody would have this problem with only athletes specifically has always boggled my mind. Like I could have walked on. They asked me to walk on at Cal State Fullerton. Had I walked on at Cal State Fullerton, that could have been deemed illegal all of a sudden.
Sure.
Like me doing that, you know, and, you know, the idea that somebody would have a problem with that, like I really don't get it. I think this is a big benefit to everybody involved here, especially these athletes who need help. Like there's a lot of these guys who come from terrible, terrible backgrounds, like insane poverty, that their family needs help, they need help, and this brings it out into the light.
It to me, it doesn't matter what background they come from.
No, like it doesn't.
If they've worked that hard, especially the schedule of a student athlete, the like I roll my eyes even at the term, frankly, because what it means to go into it, like, it's all this thinly veiled facade, right, of which they're obviously employees of basketball. The basketball season happens during, like, the first semester of college. Mm-hmm. So for your, like, one-and-done guys, like, they've got to get academically eligible. And by the time that, like, the report card, like, you're done.
You're already out.
You're done, right? Like, it's not, like, they've got no reason. It's just, it's a sham, right? What's going to happen is, and this is already happening to some degree, is some booster who owns a car dealership is, that's going to be part of the recruiting pitch, right? Is like, these kids aren't going to just get, oh, here's your $200 for this. Right. It's like, no, like, for you to, your five-star athlete to get in the door in the first place, let me get this endorsement money, quote unquote, right? That's really going to be what's paying them. But bro, that's what's already happening.
It's already happening.
And good for them. Good for the kids to be able to do it above board. We can put, you know, more in the way of protections on things like that. Have it regulated. It's just like weed or anything else, man. Like, people are going to do it. Like, let's tax it and make money off of it.
Yep.
And
I agree.
Keep people safe.
This was fun. I enjoy this. How nice is it to be able to talk about stuff that actually came from the Lakers stuff? Like, it wasn't us manufacturing the conversation completely on our own. That was fun.
And it was, you know, and that's going to get much better.
It will. It will. So that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you again to the question that was asked. It got Pete to a point where I think he might be sweating right now. So that's always fun. Continue to ask those questions. We're probably going to have to reopen the mailbag tomorrow for Friday's show to send us into the weekend and get us back on track and ready for Sunday. But hey, that's a good problem for us to have. So keep those coming in the form of a 5-star review. We'll get to those. For now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.